Welcome to the SFDC Consultant Podcast. My name is Emmerich, and today I'm happy to share a discussion that I had with Pei Moon Lin, a Salesforce program manager, consulting trainer, and coach. We spoke about the value of consultants within a consultancy and also the top two skills that you need to become a top Salesforce consultant.
My name is Pei Moon Lin. I run Lin Hao Consulting, and at the moment I'm running training on software delivery, specializing in Salesforce projects from the perspective of a consulting partner. My background is I have worked in the consulting industry for over 25 years, starting initially from the Microsoft, you know, it's on the other competition side of the fence. Starting off from the Microsoft side of things, I worked with Microsoft partners. I have been in the infrastructure arena for a long time, Windows, networking, servers. Eventually, I became a DBA. And then I moved over to call center, software and applications. And then eventually, I came over to Salesforce, having done a lot of implementation projects from the point of view of a functional consultant to tester, to trainer, to project manager and program manager, where I've stayed in the last few years of my career.
You've moved over from a, or let me put it the other way, you've had this vast experience behind you in terms of the technologies, the roles, and then you've made the decision to stay into Salesforce. I want to understand, based on the training and the knowledge that you're providing, where you're supporting organizations or potentially smaller businesses, smaller consultancies in terms of implementing Salesforce projects. What I would say, or what I would want to ask, is how, or is there a difference between thinking about the current way of implementing Salesforce projects versus a way of implementing software, let's just say 10 years ago? What would be the most, I guess, the areas which are the most different, either in a positive way or in a negative way? What would be the main differences, I guess?
I think one of the differences moving from waterfall to more agile / hybrid delivery models. And difference come obviously because the traditional waterfall methodology have been perceived to be lacking in a lot of areas, primarily around managing expectations and change control. Interestingly, it wasn't an area which I found difficult in the past, mainly because I have always believed that in order to deliver good product and good software, we need to make sure that we meet the expectations of the client. And one of the criticisms about waterfall is that you do a big chunk of discovery and design in the front end of the project, out of which you write really, really detailed documentation, many, many words, maybe some diagrams, and the client's expected to sign it off and understand what the final product's going to be. And then the partner disappears for months. And then the next time you see them is during testing. And generally, that's where a lot of unhappiness comes about. It is because that's the first time they see the system and they say, oh, I might have signed it off, but I didn't really think that this was what you were going to build for me. So it was something that I recognized earlier on. And even when I was running waterfall projects, I would do a huge amount of mock-ups, either in PowerPoint and do a lot of cut and paste and put fields where it needs to be. I make sure that my description have a lot of use cases and scenarios and examples so that the client can actually picture what it might look like. And also, I understood that change could come in. And even though the waterfall methodology has quite a rigorous change management process on top of it, I try to make it easier for the client and so that they understand any change that they might want to put in would have impact on cost. And if they're happy to do so, it's something that we could manage it in and then the client was happy. So regardless of the methodology that you use, the key thing to understand from my point of view and my learnings is a lot of conflict come when there is a big gap in expectations of either party. And if you're able to make the gap as small as possible, then the likelihood of getting disputes of any kind at any point in project is minimized. So that's I would say, the big difference from waterfall to an agile hybrid methodology that I've seen throughout the years, and also moving from Microsoft to Salesforce.
I wanted to follow up in regard to scope creep and impact and dependencies, I guess, and then change management. I would probably say that when it comes to Salesforce, if you, or I guess to any project, if you are open, I guess, with the client upfront in terms of the limitations that you have in terms of the platform or anything else, technically, you should have less of these challenges and these scope creeps later down the line, in case the client has a level of understanding what you're working with at the beginning. Would you agree with that?
I think as a customer, the word scope creep is just them wanting more. As a customer, you always want more, mm-hmm. and you always want to see what you can get away with. It's just human nature. From my point of view, as a project manager, is understanding and helping them understand the concept of the project manager's iron triangle, that mm-hmm. there's always a trade-off. You want more scope, then it's either more budget, more time, if you want to retain the quality. That something has to give.
Yeah.
And the one key thing that a lot of organizations don't quite understand is that agile feels like the new way of doing things. And one of the items in the manifesto is we welcome change, which is fine, especially if you're a client. But I see in a lot of projects where they believe that they can introduce change without impact, quality, cost, the timeline, the budget. And my job as PM is to set the expectations up front. If we're running it in an agile manner, if you want to introduce a change, something else needs to come out if you want to retain the timeline and the budget. And that gets them thinking about priorities. And you can have a sensible conversation about scope and requirements. So it's, I think you manage the expectation well up front, then scope changes is an easier conversation to have.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to understand, for anyone out there thinking of either starting a Salesforce consultancy or someone that is a one-man band, to people that have delivered projects part of a different consultant, they're thinking coming together to start something, what would you recommend that new companies would benefit from starting or from implementing quite early on in their road to becoming a gold, a platinum level consultancy? And I'm thinking specifically to project delivering, project implementations. How should they approach? Should you have like a framework of how you deliver projects quite early on? Or is that something that you're renting from your own previous experiences? How should someone implement a framework like that in their small company?
I've worked with a lot of Microsoft partners in Salesforce, three partners so far. And I can actually say that at a high level, all methodologies are the same. You have to do some scoping up front. Once what they want, you do some design. And then how you build depends on whether you're doing a waterfall or whether you're doing iterative, agile, hybrid. So you do it in chunks, and then you manage the WBS or the work breakdown structure in chunks. And then you do some testing. Generally, the testing in back is more of a whole end-to-end integration testing or data load testing, and then user acceptance testing. Then you deploy, and then you go to managed services or business as usual. That's high level how almost all projects from a consulting point of view has to happen, which obviously can be quite different from if you're a software company and you are building software all the time, like Facebook, for example, and you could use things like Lean or Extreme or test-driven development. This a whole slew of methodology. But from a consulting point of view, it's generally the same. So even if you're a two-man band or you're a team that come together to say, we are Salesforce technologists, we are certified in the on the CTA track, on the function, on the Sales Cloud, on Service Cloud, I think we'd be able to run projects. That may be true on the delivery side. There is the sales, marketing, and commercial side. So I have very limited exposure to the sales and marketing and how to build a business. But from the commercial point of view, I think whoever is starting a new consultancy will have to have a strong idea of what they want out of this business and how they plan to do it. Because I can see what's probably going to happen is that they will get a few clients and they will work day and night to make the clients happy. And one of the things that they will fall foul of is they will not have been able to manage expectations very well. So they might say, to do this project is going to take 20 days, 30 days, but they weren't able to tell the set up with the customer, managing the expectation and the scope, and the customer keep calling for additional changes and they don't want to make the customer unhappy. So they keep adding more and more time without billing the customer. And I see this again and again in many different scenarios for especially those building the business, because they know delivery. They don't have the commercial and the commercial hat in order to manage this properly. What they then end up is that they start bleeding time. And in our world as consultants, time is our widget. That's what we sell. And spending a lot of time on clients means that we are devaluing our value or our worth. So one of the first things that they do have to focus on is the commercial aspect and learning how to manage scope, the expectations, and the customer well.
In terms of the idea of time / widget that consultants are selling, of course, there is this whole concept of how much time, billable time within consultancies. And I have heard, funny enough, some consultancies which are working on that. And of course, the whole challenge of, I think I had quite early on, I had a guest that they were mentioning that sometimes you would have certain consultants not wanting to join some projects because we're not being willing to support that because it was non-billable time and so on. But I have heard also, I've had someone on the podcast quite recently where they said the way they sell implementations, because they were targeting a specific industry, I think it was like the legal industry, they were selling bundles. So rather than trying to have an open discussion with the client and say it will take you X amount of days here and X amount of days that, doing that, I guess, transparency exercise, they were just saying, this whole project, it will cost you £20,000, let's just say. And then I guess the challenge becomes internally in order to actually estimate that piece of work in a correct manner. And also they didn't really have the whole usability or billable tracking of internal consultants. I was going to ask you, where do you stand on that? I presume there is no right way of doing things, but there are probably some wrong ways of doing things in terms of approaching a culture of billable time. And of course, that's always linked to performance, it's always linked to, especially in consultancy, with things like bonuses and so on. So what is your take on that?
So utilization rate is, as you say, tied to bonus. And for all consultants, this is where we've got our eye on. We want to make sure that we're as billable as possible. Now, I think it is in the organization, the consultant's best interest not to have that as the sole target, because it leads to situations that you just mentioned. Then you get consultants who don't want to help with bid projects, don't want to help with commercial side of things, the pre-sales, the demos, mentoring newcomers, doing interviews, that sort of thing. So there are two angles. One is the organization needs to find a way to balance the targets so that you drive the behavior you want. Otherwise, all you have is a group of consultants who will just deliver a very good project, but do not contribute in other areas of the organizational growth, which is to acquire new clients, new logos, and nurturing new talent that comes into the business. So they've got to find a way to do that. Either reduce the weighting of utilization targets and give some merit to some other time that you are contributing towards the organizational growth. So that's from the organization's point of view, where they can start to create a workforce that cares about the quality of the work they deliver, as well as to promote the growth of the organization. On the flip side, what I tell consultants is that not all organizations are like that. So you need to look at yourself. If you are brand new into the industry, then it is in your interest to grow and to learn as best as you can. And that includes going for pre-sales activities, doing bids and mentoring and coaching, all these are skills that you'll take with you long after you leave the company. And not to just really, really focus on utilization levels for your own self. Also, the other side benefit of doing all these other activities, which may not be billable in your organization, is you get to know other people. You get to know the sales team. You get to know what other opportunities coming up. And in larger organizations, like where I was at Capgemini, that allowed me to connect with the accounts team. And I knew what are the exciting projects that are coming up. And I could say, hey, that one looks really cool. Plus, it's very near my home. So that would be really good for me rather than traveling a lot further. Or that is really exciting because it's on a technology that I've never actually done a project on. So you can make connections and people get to know you as well. And people get to know you through your diligence on doing proposal, on writing briefs, on putting project plans together. And that's how you grow your personal brand. So it's what you're looking for. You may get to a point where you're senior enough where you feel that this is not what you want to do. Then you need to look at the organizations that would tap into what you want in your work.
You mentioned something around getting exposure to pre-sales, getting exposure to things like bids, especially in public sector. You have a lot of that. If you were to take a fresh consultant in a consultancy job, because the way you get to be a Salesforce consultant, in my mind, before I got into Salesforce, the idea of a consultancy was what you see in the movies or in the films, a bunch of people with suits and jumping on a plane, traveling to New York or something like that, delivering a PowerPoint slide that they just prepped while waiting for their plane to go up. But actually, one way to get to a Salesforce consultant job is to be a Salesforce admin, and you're, you know, configuring a few page layouts, a few record types, a few processes, a few flows. You add 2 years of experience under your belt, you do some trailhead, and then you are able to find a Salesforce consultant job. Well, you're just an admin on multiple orgs at that point. You're not a consultant. I guess you need something else in there. And my question to you was, how would you classify a Salesforce consultant? What are the non-technical skills that person needs to know for them to be able to deliver quality work and help themselves to deliver that work? What would be some of those skills that you would see that someone needs to work on?
So what's different between a Salesforce consultant and a Salesforce admin? The Salesforce admin, you're in an organization and you are using a platform and a tool to assist the organization in achieving its objectives. When you're a consultant, you are helping other businesses to achieve their objectives. And what you are trying to do is to be an agent of change. And in order to be an effective agent of change, you need a lot of soft skills that are overlooked. So I get asked this question very frequently. What makes a very good Salesforce consultant or a consultant of any kind? And I've come up with two broad qualities that cover a few areas. One is conscientiousness, which is a deep care about the level and quality of work they produce. They don't take shortcuts. They know their stuff. And I would expect a consultant to actually know more than the average Joe, mainly because our clients are paying us for our expertise to come into their company to do a good job. So I'm expecting a level of quality, the level of competence in my team, and that you're not going to take shortcuts and that you're going to do things properly. You're going to document when you're expected to. You are going to follow the ways of working, the technical ways of working, the way you deploy, the way you write your code, the way you do everything. There's a certain expected level of competency in there. So conscientiousness is one. The other one that you hear a lot is emotional intelligence. It is. Emotional intelligence is split into four subcategories. One is self-awareness. If you're self-aware, then you are open to growing. If you do not know what you're doing wrong, or if you think that you're always right, you are not self-aware, and therefore you won't be open to constructive criticism, to growing in the area of life, either whether it's just the way you approach the client, the way you document something, the way you present something, the way you do something, the way you communicate with your team members, you are not open to feedback, and therefore it's very difficult for you to grow in your career. Then you have self-management. Do you get upset? How you manage your emotions when, say, a client's really upset at you and raises their voice? They may or may not communicate to you things that are emotionally inflammatory to you, for example. How do you handle all of that? So that's that bit on self-management. There's social awareness, to know and understand the people that you work with on the client side. So again, we are an agent of change. Is that change welcome by the user base that you're talking to? So the company might be looking at putting CRM, Salesforce, the cloud, service cloud for the contact center. Sometimes people perceive the introduction of consultants as there's going to be job cuts. They're going to put in a new system. Oh my goodness, they're going to make the team smaller. So there's going to be an element of fear, and they might not be very open to sharing information with you on how they do things because there is personal reasons not to do so. So can you pick up on that? Or are you just going to bulldoze over them? Because if you do and you aren't able to pick up on social cues, you're not going to be very, very effective as a consultant. And once you are socially aware, then you can build client relationships, relationships with other people, with your team, with your clients, with your product manager. And then things go much easier in a project once you have awareness of all of those.
The way I've thought about this is taking those individual skills, but actually you've gone a step above that, where self-awareness is multiple things. It's not just understanding that you need to grow, but actually it's a broader category that picks up multiple sections to go on that, as well as communication that falls under multiple types of communication. You have your social awareness, and then of course probably something on the project. So yeah, you are correct. It's having an overhaul type approach. Now, the last question from my side was going to be in terms of actually someone building some of those skills and trying to improve in certain areas. And I do know that at this point, I guess you weigh the value of those in case you're doing more pre-sales support. You probably need to improve certain skills. If you're like an implementation consultant, then you need to improve or to value some skills from that as more important. But what would be your recommendation in terms of someone trying to improve these areas, these soft skills, to become a better consultant? Or are you thinking of training, books, videos, trailhead, or is it just pure trial and error that you just start on these projects and you learn on the way? What's the best way that you're thinking about that?
If that's something you're looking at, then I would say you are very self-aware and that you want to grow. To grow, you want to learn. And different people have different learning styles. And some do really well through books, and some do really well just watching YouTube, lots of TED Talk around emotional intelligence. If you're lucky enough to be in an organization where you've got mentors available, then you could seek them for advice on how to approach different scenarios and how to approach problems and so on and so forth. So for me, I designed my training, my consulting masterclasses, to aim at functional consultants, the people who write the requirements to gather the processes, the as-is and the to-be processes, and to map them out, and then to write the requirements and to present them. And the reason why I started in that area is because a lot of projects that go wrong because the requirements are poorly captured. And poorly captured requirements mean your expectations by default are not set correctly. And throughout this course that I've run, I build in a lot around emotional intelligence, around managing expectations, commercial awareness, managing scope, managing clients within projects. So this is something I already do, which my students find. But if that's not something in your area, or you believe that you want to focus just on broadening the skill sets around being a great consultant, is just read and learn. And if, like I say, if you're lucky, you'll be in an organization where you've got great coaching, great mentors to lean on. Really, really important. But I think that if you understand the other person, then your communication comes after that. When you understand why a person says something that they say, it could be because, as I mentioned, the scenario I mentioned, it could be because that they're apprehensive about their work. And then your approach on how you talk to them is going to change. So that comes before the understanding of the other party. Now, the one that comes before that is actually listening and observing how they are. So when they come into the room, observe their energy. Is it positive? Is it really energized? Are they excited? Or are they subdued? They worried? They anxious? And if they are, tap into that and just say, get a feel for that and try and find out why they are, why they have this energy. And then find out and listen, ask the question and then listen and not judge and not come with, here I am to solve your problem, to install the CRM. I'm going to make your life all better. By the way, there might be some job losses. I don't know that. But you start with listening and then understanding. And then when you are able to do the first two, then the communication will come if you care enough to want to touch the person and connect with that person in a more deeper way than just a, I'm here to install the system. You tell me what you want. I will build what you want.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you for your time. And I think some of the things that you mentioned in there, the biggest thing for me was, I always expect when I ask people about what they feel like qualities of Salesforce consultants are to go towards the bedrock of consultancy, like communication skills and presentation. And I find it interesting the fact that you elevated that just above the fact that it's not just that, but it's probably that in different scenarios you have to have different types of skills. So I think that's quite important. Any last words from you in case people want to see the courses that you've built? What are the best places for people to find what you're doing?
I run the course. I started running them in the summer at the height of COVID because there were a lot of people who were out of work. And so the courses are free for those who are out of work. But the caveat is that you've got to be in the UK. You've got to have a couple of certifications and you are keen to go to become a consultant because it's leaned very heavily towards consulting skills and practices and those sort of things around methodologies as well. However, I also welcome those who want to come on the course as paid course. And I do have clients and partners who do that. So I'm just embarking on trying to build my personal brand on social media. So those are the two places that I hang out more, mostly in LinkedIn. Thank you. And in the meantime, I've got new dates coming out for the training and I will post, I'll start trying to get people to come on and help with the exposure.
Thank you for listening to the SFDC Consultant Podcast. Be sure to visit sfdcconsultant.com to access the show notes and discover additional content. If you enjoy the podcast, it would be amazing if you could subscribe, give us a review, and share it with your peers. Until next time, take care.